Immediately, the surveyor and the anthropologist beside me went slack, their eyes unfocused. I was shocked. But I mimicked them, hoping that the psychologist had not noticed the lag. I felt no compulsion whatsoever, but clearly we had been pre-programmed to enter a hypnotic state in response to those words uttered by the psychologist. Her demeanor more assertive than just a moment before, the psychologist said, "You will retain a memory of having discussed several options with regard to the tunnel. You will find that you ultimately agreed with me about the best course of action, and that we felt quite confident about this course of action. You will experience a sensation of calm whenever you think about this decision, and you will remain calm once back inside the tunnel, although you will react to any stimuli as per your training. You will not take undue risks. You will continue to see a structure that is made of coquina and stone. You will trust your colleagues completely and feel a continued sense of fellowship with them. When you emerge from the structure, any time you see a bird in flight, it will trigger a strong feeling that you are doing the right thing, that you are in the right place. When I snap my fingers, you will have no memory of this conversation, but will follow my directives. You will feel very tired, and you will want to retire to your tents to get a good night's sleep before tomorrow's activities. You will not dream. You will not have nightmares." I stared straight ahead as she said these words, and when she snapped her fingers, I took my cue from the actions of the other two. I don't believe the psychologist suspected anything, and I retired to my tent just as the others retired to their tents. Now I had new data to process, along with the tower. We knew that the psychologist's role was to provide balance and calm in a situation that might become stressful, and that part of this role included hypnotic suggestion. I could not blame her for performing that role, but to see it laid out so nakedly troubled me. It is one thing to think you might be receiving hypnotic suggestion, and quite another to experience it as an observer. What level of control could she exert over us? What did she mean by saying that we would continue to think of the tower as made of coquina and stone? Most important, however, I now could guess at one way in which the spores had affected me. They had made me immune to the psychologist's hypnotic suggestions. They had made me into a kind of conspirator against her. Even if her purposes were benign, I felt a wave of anxiety whenever I thought of confessing that I was resistant to hypnosis, especially since it meant any underlying conditioning hidden in our training also was affecting me less and less. I now hid not one but two secrets, and that meant I was steadily, irrevocably, becoming estranged from the expedition and its purpose. Estrangement in all its many forms was nothing new for these missions. I understood this from having been given an opportunity along with the others to view videotape of the re-entry interviews with the members of the 11th Expedition. Once those individuals had been identified as having returned to their former lives, they were quarantined and questioned about their experiences. Reasonably enough, in most cases, family members had called the authorities, finding their loved ones' return uncanny or frightening. Any papers found on these returnees had been confiscated by our superiors for examination and study. This information, too, we were allowed to see. The interviews were fairly short, and in them all 8 expedition members told the same story. They had experienced no unusual phenomena while in Area X, taken no unusual readings, and reported no unusual internal conflicts. But after a period of time, each one of them had had the intense desire to return home and had set out to do so. None of them could explain how they had managed to come back across the border or why they had gone straight home instead of first reporting to their superiors. One by one, they had simply abandoned the expedition, left their journals behind, and drifted home somehow. Throughout these interviews, their expressions were friendly and their gazes direct. If their words seemed a little flat, Then this went with the kind of general calm, the almost dreamlike demeanor each had returned with. Even the compact, wiry man who had served as the expedition's military expert, a person who'd had a mercurial and energetic personality. In terms of their affect, I could not tell any of the eight apart. I had the sense that they now saw the world through a kind of veil, that they spoke to their interviewers from across a vast distance in time and space. As for the papers, they proved to be sketches of landscapes within Area X, or brief descriptions. Some were cartoons of animals or caricatures of fellow expedition members. All of them had, at some point, drawn the lighthouse or written about it. Looking for hidden meaning in these papers was the same as looking for hidden meaning in the natural world around us. If it existed, it could be activated only by the eye of the beholder. At the time, I was seeking oblivion, and I sought in those blank, anonymous faces, even the most painfully familiar, a kind of benign escape, a death that would not mean being dead. 2. Integration. In the morning, I woke with my senses heightened, so that even the rough brown bark of the pines or the ordinary lunging swoop of the woodpecker came to me as a kind of minor revelation. The lingering fatigue from the four-day hike to base camp had left me. Was this some side effect of the spores, or just the result of a good night's sleep? I felt so refreshed that I didn't really care. But my reverie was soon tempered by disastrous news. The anthropologist was gone, her tent empty of her personal effects. Worse, in my view, the psychologist seemed shaken, and as if she hadn't slept. She was squinting oddly, her hair more wind-blown than usual. I noticed dirt caked on the sides of her boots. She was favoring her right side, as if she had been injured.
"Where is the anthropologist?" the surveyor demanded,
while I hung back, trying to make my own sense of it. "What have you done with the anthropologist?" was my unspoken question, which I knew was unfair. The psychologist was no different than she had been before. That I knew the secret to her magician's show did not necessarily mean she was a threat. The psychologist stepped into our rising panic with a strange assertion. "I talked to her late last night. What she saw in that structure unnerved her to the point that she did not want to continue with this expedition. She has started back to the border to await extraction. She took a partial report with her so that our superiors will know our progress." The psychologist's habit of allowing a slim smile to cross her face at inappropriate times made me want to slap her.
"But she left her gear, her gun, too," the surveyor said.
"She took only what she needed, so we would have more, including an extra gun." "Do you think we need an extra gun?" I asked the psychologist. I was truly curious. In some ways, I found the psychologist as fascinating as the tower. Her motivations, her reasons. Why not resort to hypnosis now? Perhaps even with our underlying conditioning, some things are not suggestible, or fade with repetition. Or she lacked the stamina for it after the events of the night before.
"I think we don't know what we need," the psychologist said, "but we definitely did not need the anthropologist here if she was unable to do her job."
The surveyor and I stared at the psychologist. The surveyor's arms were crossed. We had been trained to keep a close watch on our colleagues for signs of sudden mental stress or dysfunction. She was probably thinking what I was thinking. We had a choice now. We could accept the psychologist's explanation for the anthropologist's disappearance, or reject it. If we rejected it, then we were saying the psychologist had lied to us, and therefore also rejecting her authority at a critical time. And if we tried to follow the trail back home, hoping to catch up with the anthropologist to verify the psychologist's story, would we have the will to return to base camp afterward?
"We should continue with our plan," the psychologist said. "We should investigate the tower."
The word tower in this context felt
like a blatant plea for my loyalty. Still, the surveyor wavered, as if fighting the psychologist's suggestion from the night before. This alarmed me in another way. I was not going to leave Area X before investigating the tower. This fact was ingrained in every part of me, and in that context, I could not bear to think of losing another member of the team so soon, leaving me alone with the psychologist. Not when I was unsure of her, and not when I still had no idea of the effects of my exposure to the spores. "She's right," I said. "We should continue with the mission. We can make do without the anthropologist." But my pointed stare at the surveyor made it clear to both of them that we would revisit the issue of the anthropologist later. The surveyor gave a surly nod and looked away. The audible sigh of either relief or exhaustion came from the psychologist. "That's settled, then," she said, and brushed past the surveyor to start making breakfast. The anthropologist had always made breakfast before. At the tower, the situation changed yet again. The surveyor and I had readied light packs with enough food and water to spend the full day down there. We both had our weapons. We both had donned our breathing masks to keep out the spores, even though it was too late for me. We both wore hard hats with fixed beams on them. But the psychologist stood on the grass just beyond the circle of the tower, slightly below us, and said, "I'll stand guard here." "Against what?" I asked, incredulous. I did not want to let the psychologist out of my sight. I wanted her embedded in the risk of the exploration, not standing at the top with all of the power over us implied by that position. The surveyor wasn't happy either. In an almost pleading way that suggested a high level of suppressed stress, she said, "You're supposed to come with us. It's safer with three." "But you need to know that the entrance is secured," the psychologist said, sliding a magazine into her handgun. The harsh scraping sound echoed more than I would have thought. The surveyor's grip on her assault rifle tightened until I could see her knuckles whiten. "You need to come down with us. There's no reward in the risk of all of us going down," the psychologist said, and from the inflection I recognized a hypnotic command. The surveyor's grip on her rifle loosened. The features of her face became somehow indistinct for a moment. "You're right," the surveyor said. "Of course you're right. Makes perfect sense." A twinge of fear traveled down my back. Now it was two against one. I thought about that for a moment, took in the full measure of the psychologist's stare as she focused her attention on me. Nightmarish, paranoid scenarios came to me, returning to find the entrance blocked or the psychologist picking us off as we reached for the open sky. Except, she could have killed us in our sleep any night of the week. "It's not that important," I said after a moment. "You're as valuable to us up here as down there." And so we descended, as before, under the psychologist's watchful eye. The first thing I noticed on the staging level before we reached the wider staircase that spiraled down, before we encountered again the words written on the wall, the tower was breathing. The tower breathed, and the walls, when I went to touch them, carried the echo of a heartbeat. And they were not made of stone, but of living tissue. Those walls were still blank, but a kind of silvery white phosphorescence rose off of them. The world seemed to lurch, and I sat down heavily next to the wall, and the surveyor was by my side, trying to help me up. I think I was shaking as I finally stood. I don't know if I can convey the enormity of that moment in words. The tower was a living creature of some sort. We were descending into an organism.